Hey, this is Brandon Crawford from the San Francisco Giants, and you're listening to TortureCast.
You're listening to a podcast by and for fans of the San Francisco Giants. With hosts Willie Dills, Chad King, Ben Lee, and Eric Nathanson. Dedicated to the greatest team in Major League Baseball, the San Francisco Giants. This is TortureCast.
It's Monday, July 22nd, 2019, and this is episode 173 of the TortureCast, the podcast by and for fans of your streaking, hot, unbelievable San Francisco Giants. And joining me today once again is Eric Nathanson. How you doing, Eric? What's going on with this team?
I've got playoff fever. No, maybe not. Well, maybe a little bit. I don't know.
Some fans have it, and it's getting spread, that's for sure.
It is, and a few days ago, I would have thought everybody was bonkers, but I mean, I didn't think we'd be sitting here 100 games into the season talking about a 50-50 team. I thought at best they would be 40-60. It's kind of stunning what the Giants have done. 7-1 in the last 7 days.
Yeah, when we include that doubleheader, which we were still recording when the Giants were up, I believe it was 17-2. They added a couple more runs. Crawford got all the way up to 8 RBI to tie, who is it, Cepeda, you said?
And Mays for the most in a game.
And it was just incredible. So technically they went 7-1 since we last recorded, and embedded in there was that 7-game winning streak. They are 14-3 in July, 15 out of their last 18 when you include June 30th. By the way, that was the game I did attend, my first one of the year. So I set this whole thing in motion. I just want to have everyone know that. Okay. 15-3 in the last 18. They are now in second place, tied in the NL West, and of course just 2.5 games behind the wild card, and it's absolutely flipped everybody around in terms of should the Giants be sellers or should they just stand pat. I certainly am not on the bandwagon of being buyers. I think that's irresponsible. But, you know, their playoff chances are still rated at very low in terms of Vegas odds and Baseball Reference and those kind of sites. But just kind of serendipitously and subjectively, there's definitely a feeling coursing through that clubhouse, I think. And it's become very evident, including everyone still expecting Farhan Zaidi to sell, including that national article by Jeff Passan. And he actually just ripped into him, apparently, according to Mike Kruko on KMBR the other day. He was in Boach's office, Farhan was, and he was pissed about this article saying Zaidi's still selling no matter what. Because Zaidi basically called him up, didn't use any expletives, apparently he's very clean, but he got very, very animated and said, where are you getting this? You are not getting that from me. I don't even know what I'm going to do. It depends on how this team is doing the next couple of weeks. So I think with that observation, you really do truly have to believe that Farhan is in a sit and wait mode right now. I mean, what do you think?
That whole thing fascinated me when it came out, because it's like, okay, so maybe Farhan isn't just in a rip it all down, start over type of mode. To be fair to Zaidi, when he came into the Dodgers job, it wasn't like he had to take a team from the ground up. He just had to tweak and improve a current division winner. The Dodgers had won the division the year before, 2013, when he joined them. So it wasn't like he had to strip it down, and that's something we'd never seen him do. But suddenly, some of these tweaks and moves that he's made, these getting Dickerson and Yastrzemski, calling up guys at the right time, being willing to cut ties with guys when he sees that it's not going to work out, maybe he doesn't have to go on full-on sell mode, and he really doesn't know what he's doing. And it was fascinating to learn that, because yeah, it tells us we really don't know what the Giants are going to do on the overall basis. And I appreciate he in that same exchange, apparently at the end of it, Bochy, somebody asked Zaidi if the players knew that's how Farhan felt. And Bochy's like, I don't know. And Farhan told Bochy, he goes, well, tell them. So, you know, management wants the players to know that they have their back, and the players right now feel like management is in their corner, and they're willing to keep it together as long as the team's going well. So it's kind of, you know, that right there I thought was like a really big moment in the week to tell me that the Giants are going to take another week, and they're going to go all the way up to the deadline until they decide if they're going to be buyers, sellers, or just, you know, maybe make a run at it. Mm-hmm. So I'm fascinated by this. I love it. I'm having so much fun with this. I mean, 2.5 games back of the wild card. We were always talking about how there was 7-8 teams ahead of them. Well, now there's only 4. And there's 2 months of baseball left to be played. Teams go from 500 on a run to reaching the playoffs all the time. Why can't it be the Giants? I've got a little bit of the fever. I'm not going to lie.
No, I was completely immune to it, but it's starting to chip away. I got to admit. For example, right now, looking at 538, you know, they do all the statistical stuff for politics, and they also do it for sports. They currently have the Giants' chances of making the playoffs at 6%. Now, when you look at this, the Arizona Diamondbacks, who are also with an identical record, 2.5 back, they forecast them as a 28% chance for making the playoffs. And so someone might honestly ask, well, wait a minute, they have the same record. Why is one, you know, classified as almost 5 times the chance of making the playoffs? This is the forecasting of these sites, basically looking at kind of strength of schedule, kind of the runs scored versus runs against. But they also look at these things and these streaks. And there's certainly a lot of analytical people and these algorithms that basically are putting very little stock into this recent 3-week run. They're basically saying, well, the Giants maybe aren't the team from April and May, but they certainly are not the team from July. And who can blame them for that? I mean, they're not going to go 14-3, you know, winning percentage the rest of the way. We know that. They're probably somewhere in the middle. And so they kind of use those statistics and they say, okay, well, we still think they're going to be worse than the Diamondbacks, because the Diamondbacks have been more consistent this year. And so analytics don't do well with streaks. I get that. But that said, the streak itself has that kind of subjective, tangential parts to it. Not only is the team quite different, structured from when it was in April and May, but now you have this chemistry forming in that clubhouse, and you have some of these players starting to believe, and management starting to believe, it looks like. So that could carry itself into playing maybe 550 to 600 ball the rest of the way, which it still would be tough to make a playoff spot with that, because out of those 4 teams, there's going to be one that gets hot. And like you said, why not be the Giants? It could be. Right. It could be. But if the Giants play 500 or 550 ball, let's say, you know, the Phillies or the Nats or someone could be playing 600 ball. And that's the issue. So, again, their chances of making the playoffs are certainly well under 50% at this point. I think most people would agree on that. But it doesn't mean that there isn't a chance. And Zaidi did say in that article that, you know, hey, I don't want to, if I think a team has a chance of making the playoffs now, I don't want to hamstring that chance, is essentially what he's saying. So we'll see. I think, you know, the next what pre-show we determined the Giants have until July 31st, but that day's game is too late. It's past the deadline. So they only have 7 more games to play before the absolute last minute that they could execute a trade. And it's going to be really, really interesting, because I think we might be a little bit differing in opinion there, but I was thinking, well, if they go something like 2-5, let's say, so they're going to be 3 games under 500, probably at worst they'd be 4-5 games out of the wild card. Would that necessarily cause him to pull the trigger? And you say yes. And I do think he probably still would pull a trade. I guess I agree with you in that sense. I'm just wondering if it would be riding the wave of like, oh, this is just a small blip. Yeah, they went 2-5 this week, but next week they'll go back to 5-2 and they'll be right back in it, you know, 2.5 games out. But if they pull off a 4-3 or 5-2 this week, then they're going to be above 500. And at that point, I don't see him being able to sell anyone, because he would just be torn to shreds by the players and some of management and ownership probably, and certainly the public.
Yeah, that's where the human element and not just numbers come into play. There are people that other people have to answer to. You know, Farhan has to answer to his bosses. If the Giants are selling more tickets, if the Giants are getting more revenue with the team that they currently have on the field, management may not want him to screw with that, may not want to send off Bumgarner or Will Smith or anybody or Panda like that. So there's always that human element. And you talk about the projections and how they are based on how they've been in the past. past compared to the future. Because July, they've played 17 games in July, but they've already hit more home runs than any other month. They have a 280 batting average in July. The highest other was June at 239. Yeah. So you think it's possible that it would be unsustainable, but it is such a different team that they have now. They're still mixing and matching, but there's set guys. Yastrzemski is set. Pillar is set. Zach Green might be set for a little bit. You've got Slater, who seems to be entrenched in a good role. Like, all the guys seem to have roles now. They didn't have that before. So I think this week the offense is really going to dictate how Farhan looks at it, because we're going to go through the past week, and these games against the Mets, they didn't blow the barn doors off the Mets. They barely squeaked by. They literally won three games all in extra innings, and the only game they lost was in nine innings. So I think Farhan's going to look at the offense and see what happens this week against the Cubs and in San Diego to, you know, at least make that final decision, because we're a week away, and it's kind of blows my mind that the Giants are in contention for the first time so close to the deadline when we expect everything to start happening.
Yeah, you touch on a really important point I've been thinking about all week, and you know, they come back from Colorado just completely blowing the doors off the Rockies, outscoring them 40-15. The offense is on a roll, and everybody kind of predicted, oh boy, they're coming back to the neutered park that it is in Oracle Park. And sure enough, that's exactly what happened. Barring one game, they allowed 11 runs for the Mets. Their offense was completely shut down. And if you look at just from a purely offensive point of view, they were outscored 15-11 in the series. So they only scored 11 runs over four games. But they won three out of four of them. And like you said, all in extra innings, all by one run, all three in walk-off fashion. So it's exciting, it's fun, it's energizing, it's all of those things. But you still got to look up the whole thing and saying they did not crush the Mets at all. They did not crush them. And each of those three games could have gone the other way, especially the first game in which the Mets actually scored a run in the 16th, but the Giants pulled out with two in their Houdini act to pull out that win. So you know, even if they won two out of three of those games, they split. If they lose two out of three extra inning games, which happens all the time, they lose three out of four, and everyone's talking a completely different story. So it's that razor's edge the Giants have been playing on this past half a week. And that's it is a cause for concern, because you don't want this to be smoke and mirrors as part of their streak, you know? They certainly have improved the offense. There's no question about that. They're certainly blowing some teams out. So they're certainly a better team, but are they truly a 14-3 team this month? Yeah, maybe, you know, but again, there's all those tangentials of like, hey, yeah, they only won by one run all three games, but they willed that to happen. And that says a lot about a team, especially in a streak like this. You know, the bullpen, except for the blowout 11-4 loss, was nails. They shut the Mets down.
That's the key. Yeah,
and that's
that
what
was
kept
the key
in.
Right there. Yep, the entire weekend, that's what kept them in it, and that's why you have to look at, again, with the trading deadline, excuse me, that's a position of strength right now for the Giants. Do they really want to blow that up? Can they guarantee that they're going to bring somebody new up, and he's going to fill that slot the same way that the current bullpen is constructed? And so, you know, that kept them in it. And it's just weird because they're so much better on the road than they are at home. Like, they have a 248 batting average on the road, 224 at home. Like, I don't know why it's so drastically different. 69 homers on the road, 37 at home. So I don't know if they have to, this is what they have to do to keep contending, is win the close, low-scoring games at home and then bash the crap out of the ball when they go on the road, because they seem happy to do that. And I think they're going to keep doing that as the year goes on. Like, I really expect them to have a winning road record. Mm-hmm. So, like, do they look at that and think that will help keep us in it? You know, we know we've got the bullpen and the pitching to handle the home games, so maybe on the road games we can be the Bash Brothers, because between Dickerson and Vogt and Solano and Crawford, I mean, everybody stands out at a different time on the road. You know, at home, it's all these, like, close, hard-fought games. So I think that that's going to be their biggest concern. And so maybe they'd look to add a bat. Who the hell knows? I have no idea what's going on now.
Yeah, you point that out. They're four games above 500 on the road at 27-23, and a mirror record of 23-27 at home. It's just their offense completely gets neutered. Now, I know their ERA is also lower at home. I mean, it's just a pitcher's park. But the difference between their offense on road and home is much more drastic than their pitching difference between road and home. So that's what that's what's really mysterious about it. You can't just say, oh, well, the visitors are doing just as well when they're on the road and just as poorly when they're at home. No, that's not actually statistically
it's
true.
Like a
so,
2-run per game differential. They're scoring more, 2 runs more on the road than they are at home. It's I mean, I can't recall a team like that. You know, usually just home field is the advantage where you're going to do all those good things. I mean, 275 runs in 50 games on the road, 167 in 50 games at home. That's 2 full runs a game. That's like 5-3. That's unbelievable.
So they are now 22-10 in 1-run games, just an unbelievable record, and 9-2 in extra innings, including these 3 in a row, which were all 1-run games, and they were all extra inning games. That's great. Don't get me wrong.
That was awesome.
But again, I've read a couple articles that looked at the history of 1-run records, and I remember a couple years ago, Texas, I think it was 2016 or 2017, they were like 30-8 in 1-run games. They were going to set a major league record, all this stuff. The next year, they were under 500 in 1-run games. They were trying to point out that there's really no rhyme or reason for why a particular team does really well in 1-run games 1 year, and then they could just flip a coin and do poorly the next year. This isn't necessarily an inherited trait or something of a team. They're basically attributing a lot of it to just luck and good timing. And when you look at the spectrum of 30 teams, there's going to be that bell curve. And just statistically speaking, with probability and chance, you're going to have a group of teams that have a very, very high winning percentage in 1-run games, and then a very low winning percentage. And then most of the league is going to be somewhere in the middle, close to 500. And so the point is that, okay, they're 20-8 or 22-10. That's fantastic. But it doesn't mean that they're always going to have this winning percentage the rest of the year. They could quite easily go 5-10 in their next 1-run games. There isn't any necessarily magic to this. But maybe, again, it's some unquantifiable thing in that clubhouse that you can argue that does sustain them in these 3 1-run games where the bullpen just, under high-leverage situations, just shut it down. Well, maybe in a low-leverage situation, or maybe if it was a different team with different pitchers, they could not have that mental fortitude to do it. I don't know. But whatever it is, the Giants are doing well in those close games. And if they had even just a 500 record in 1-run games, they would be well out of the race.
Yeah, it's the one thing, though, that 1-run record doesn't account for is, like, it does show that strong bullpens can hold leads, but it doesn't account for the times that the Giants are up or any team is up by, like, 4 runs, and then one guy in the bullpen gives up 3 runs, so they only win it by 1 run in the ninth. You know, it doesn't account for those kind of games. Or the, 14-8 game that suddenly is 14-13 with the 1 runner on, and you've run through 3 guys in your bullpen that you didn't expect to. So that's why, you know, like you say, it all evens out. It's kind of on a curve because not all 1-run games are created equally. But games that are examples of this past weekend specifically show that sometimes good teams, though, with good bullpens will be able to get through. Yeah. You know, because the Giants were able to wait out 2 really good starting pitchers on Thursday and Friday night between DeGrom, Syndergaard and DeGrom. So they were able to get into the bullpen, and when it was the Mets bullpen that cracked first, they won the game because the Giants bullpen was so good, and it does go back to the 1-run games there. So it's kind of a, you take it with a grain of salt, but you do appreciate the fact that they're winning all the close games. But it didn't start out this past week. When we were recording, it was 19-2 you mentioned, and then they swept the doubleheader. I didn't expect them to win both ends of the doubleheader, but once they got 19-2, it really is. Even with good teams, it's hard to do. But since I think they got to rest some people, and then all of a sudden, after 19 runs, there was a 2-1 ball game at night, and D-Rod was really strong, and the 2 runs were on back-to-back home runs by Crawford and Vogt, and that was it. That was all the scoring in the entire game. And the Vogt one was fascinating to me because Kipe, on the home run call, he basically called the home run as Vogt was swinging. It was just unbelievable, his baseball acumen there. And so they won 2 in a row, and that put them where? At like 4 in a row for the – so it was like, okay, maybe there's something with the Giants going on after winning a doubleheader. I can't remember the last time they won a doubleheader on the road.
Oh, I can't even remember that either. It was funny because I have a Dodger friend. He was in my fraternity. He's living in Iowa now, I believe. So he texted me after that first 19-2 demolition of the Rockies, and he texts me, "Got runs?" to a group of us Giants. And then I immediately texted him right after, "Probably we'll only score 2 tonight." And then he texts after the game, and he's like, "Dude, 2 exactly, Nostradamus."
Yeah, but you didn't think they'd win when you said that.
No. My other buddy Dylan, who's a Giants season ticket holder, he said, "Baseball is so weird sometimes." And I just put an emoji of dropping the mic because I guessed 2. It was really weird. So I was right, but they won. And with D-Rod pitching, you're just like, he was called up as a spot starter. You can expand the rosters to 26 on doubleheader days. And so it was great. It was like, again, when the Giants needed it, they needed it, and they got it. So, and then they go into Tuesday, and that was another crazy game, you know? They're up 4-1. 4-1 in the ninth inning. Yeah. And you're like, Will Smith has got this, right? Nope. 2 home runs in the inning, 3 runs later, and suddenly it's tied. And you get that weird feeling again. You're like, no, I don't want the magic to end. Let's not stop the streak with a freaking 3-run blown save by the best reliever in the National League. It's also hurting his trade value, by the way. No, you know? His ERA like soared to like 2.7 or something when it was like 1.9. Because he had a couple blown saves since the post-All-Star break. Everyone's blaming the All-Star game itself.
But yeah, Joey Gallo. Must have broken him. Yeah, Joey exactly. Gallo broke Will Smith.
But the Giants they don't even skip a beat. Right the next inning, they get 4 runs in the 10th, just all these singles all over the place. That game, Dickerson goes 4-for-5. Yaz, 3-for-5 with a home run, and they banged out 14 hits. So it was great to see the Giants respond like that.
Yeah, that was funny because, like you said, all those thoughts go through your mind. You know, oh no, it's another Coors Field game. Oh no, Will Smith's hurting his trade value. Oh no, here's the end of the magic. And then the Giants are like, nah, we got you. Yeah. And they keep rolling Wednesday. They jump out to a huge lead. They had like an 11-4 lead in that game where they ended up winning 11-8. Solano, he went 4-for-5. Belt was 3-for-6. The Giants had 18 hits Wednesday afternoon in the 11-8 victory. But again, the bullpen started to let some of it back because it's Coors Field. Vogt homered, Solano homered. I think there was like 4 homers in that game. Yeah, and it ended a 4-game sweep where the Giants outscored the Rockies 40-10. That's 10 runs a game. We're used to it being the other way around at Coors Field lately. Like, this is bizarro world.
Oh, there's no doubt about it. It's very weird to see the Giants come in and actually do the crushing. I mean, the Rockies have made the postseason each of the last 2 years, and up until this bad streak, I admit the Giants caught the Rockies at a downturn. They had lost 6 in a row before the break, and they've continued to lose since. So the Rockies have just been plummeting, and the Giants caught them at the right time, and the Giants are hot right now. So that was great. So they come back home against the Mets, who actually had also come in fairly warm. They had won 4 in a row coming into Thursday's game, and it was a tight scoring game, just like everyone expected. It was 1-1 going into extra innings, and both bullpens just match zeros across the board until the 16th when a solo home run was hit by the Mets. And you're thinking, okay, well, it was nice while it lasted, but that's 16 innings. That's just crazy. But nope, the Giants come right back, and Brandon Crawford delivered a game-tying double, and then eventually with another I believe it was a walk and a single. The Giants had the bases loaded with nobody out. And now you're thinking, all right. No. You can't blow this, right? You just can't blow this. Oh, by the way, early in the game, I forgot to mention, I believe it was the 10th inning, Will Smith allowed, it was a walk or single and then a double, put runners on second and third with nobody out. And Boach just left him in there, said, you know what? You dig yourself out of this hole, right? And he did, man. He bared down, and with a walk mixed in there, he struck out the side. Oh, that was so awesome. And then to see him so pumped coming off the mound, too.
Yeah, I mean, he was in it. Well, that was after 9 innings of Bumgarner, wasn't it?
Yes, and so Bumgarner had just an epic start. 5 hits, 1 run, 9 innings. And it was a first-inning run. And the Mets didn't score all the way until the 16th inning. So it was 15 consecutive scoreless innings by Bumgarner in the bullpen. It was just unreal.
So, you didn't expect them to come back when it got to the bottom of the 16th, but Solano.
Yeah, but Solano comes up with the bases loaded. They bring in an outfielder for the 5th infielder, and Solano said, it doesn't matter to me.
Pull in an outfielder. It's going to be J.D. Davis who's going to play at the second base position. McNeil.
Very weird to see five infielders.
Position. Rosario will play in the hole. And Solano is going to step up. Base hit! And this game is over!
Yeah, and the way he hit that ball, it was opposite field. It was a line shot. There was a possibility if he hit that a few feet to the right and the first baseman could have snagged it for a double play. So it was good. It was good to get that through. The Giants ended up winning 3-2.
Alonso was on the ground like he thought he should have had a shot at it. But, I mean, he slapped that through there pretty quick.
Yeah.
And Kipe, like, held off on the call there. Like, he was worried somebody was going to get thrown out at a base or something like that. Yeah. Like, when he said, this game is over. Like, he was worried somebody didn't touch a base or something like that.
Yeah.
But that was a quick game, too. Like, you know, we're going to talk about Friday, too, that went to extra innings. That was a quick game. All these games with the Mets, when the pitching is good, nobody's been walking anybody. So these games have been going by quick, which I appreciate here on the East Coast, because 16 innings, I mean, that got to be late.
Got to be real late. But yeah, they turn around the next night, and well, I took my family to the game. I don't often go to the Giants games anymore as a fan, mostly because my family, it's, you know, short attention span theater with my son. But he's getting older now, and he really enjoyed this game. Even though it was 0-0 through nine innings, they really enjoyed it because it was quick, it was crisp, it was well played. We were sitting behind the home plate and in front of the press box, so we had a lot of foul balls to keep the kids awake, and you know, I bought them a ton of crappy food that they just loved, you know. I mean, they were having a blast, they really were. And then when it went into the 10th inning, well, really the bottom of the 9th and into the 10th, I was saying, hey kids, maybe we're going to be lucky enough to see a walk-off tonight. So I had explained to them what a walk-off was, and I was like, if they score a run in any of these innings and extra innings and they go up, that means they win, and so the game's over. And then they come out and they party and they dance and they throw Gatorade on each other, and the music goes and the whole crowd's going to go crazy, and they're like, oh, we want to see that so bad. And sure enough, we get to the bottom of the 10th, and we're barely over 2 hours into the game. That's what was so sweet about it. We were actually staying in the city that night, so we didn't have kind of that impending doom of a hour-and-a-half drive home. We just knew we had to catch an Uber back to the hotel about 10 minutes. But Alex Dickerson was at first. I believe he had walked to lead off the inning, but then the next two guys got out, and that brought up Panda. And, of course, Dickerson was running on the play.
The leadoff walk. Pablo has not had a hit. 0 for 4. Pablo pops it up. And it drops the ball. They're waving him. Here comes the throw. The relay. It's wild. The Giants have won it. Unbelievable. And the Giants have taken down both aces, winning against Syndergaard last night and DeGrom tonight. And now the streak is 7 games in a row. Just a little bit of an I got it, you take it. And in the end, Smith just flat out misjudges it.
Just great. Oh, that was so much fun. We just went insane. I mean, some of the time, you know, when you see a pop-up like that, you'll kind of turn away and go, okay, what am I going to go eat? You know, like they blew another chance. But not this one. It was just kind of like, well, let's just see what happens. Everybody was standing up. No one thought it was going to fall. It was just kind of, that sort of in-betweener, and you're like, well, maybe it'll be. And then you realize, oh, no, he's going to get to it. And then he just completely flat-out missed it. And I was saying to you pre-show, Dickerson's flying around third. Wotus is sending him home, which I totally agree with. You got two outs. You might as well take a shot.
Yeah, absolutely.
A decent throw, and Dickerson's out by 5 feet. I mean, the catcher was lined right up, but the ball was so far inside the infield, there was no shot the catcher had to even put a glove on the ball. So he scored. Everybody went crazy. The kids went crazy. I'm sure you saw some of my pictures on social media. Kids were just happy. We sat down and waited for Tony Bennett to sing. I had to do that with the kids. My daughter loved that. It was a lot of fun. Just a great game. And man, to see DeGrom in life, real life, man, that guy's filthy. He is so filthy. Oh my God. He was just consistently hitting 98, 99. And the slider was like 94. I mean, it was just disgusting. They had no chance, but like they just said there in the highlight, they beat Syndergaard and DeGrom. I mean, they weren't the losing pitchers, but they beat, you know,
They waited both of them out. Yeah, they waited both of them out. They didn't necessarily do anything, but Bumgarner Thursday and then Beattie on Friday. I mean, you saw Beattie's best game as a pro. What did he throw? Eight innings?
Eight innings of shutout ball.
He was working it, too. He had those batters off balance. He was bringing his changeup at the right time. He was dropping curveballs to surprise batters. He was getting strikeouts. It was like you got to see a really, really well-pitched game. And then to end on an error like that, the Giants, I don't know if you remember, a year ago in New York, they scored in an extra inning on a very similar blown play by the Mets left fielder. Except this time it was, you know, a kind of, are you going to take it? Am I going to take it? Last time the guy just dropped the ball. And you got to give credit to Dickerson for reading it like an outfielder and just being like, screw this, I'm going. Because that throw, if that throw had been online, that guy's dead. I think he threw it to the umpire instead of the catcher because the umpire had to move out of the way when the ball went flying past. So I think when he turned around and just fired, the first guy he saw was the umpire, not the catcher. And that's why the throw was so far off. And I mean, when you're going good, you're going good. And the Giants, they're still going good.
Yeah, the winning streaks are based off of good skill, being hot, but also luck, just like in a no-hitter or perfect game. It always takes that one play here, that one play there that swings the balance of a game, and that's what the Giants are experiencing right now. And I think we all hope that it doesn't swing the other way too soon and that they at least play somewhat above 500 the rest of the way, because this team is doing great. So they go right into Saturday, and unfortunately their seven-game win streak was snapped. That was their season high in terms of a win streak, and it can't last forever. And Shark, who had been pitching very, very well as of late, did allow four runs in five innings. The bullpen came in and just crapped the bed. You had Derek Holland and I can't remember who else, but all three pitchers gave up at least three runs each. And the Giants lose 11-4 despite a couple of late home runs in the ninth inning by Yaz and Dickerson. The game wasn't close at all. It was just one of those stinkers. But again, if you're going to lose, you might as well lose like that. And you're just like, okay, just chalk it up to a bad game, tip your hat, and move on to the next one. It's not as soul-crushing as the Mets losing the way they've been losing. They get a lead in the 16th, and they lose the game. Then they drop a ball in left field and lose the game. And then that translates right into Sunday, where they, we'll talk about this in a second, just a flurry of transactions. Just a flurry of transactions. And one guy who we had been talking about, you had been pointing out specifically, Zach Greene, who had been hot down in Sacramento, was called up to start at third base. And he did very, very well. He went 2-for-3, including a game-tying RBI double, which was crucial because that's what sent it into extra innings. So that was extremely important. And then Connor Menez, who made the spot start, and he pitched pretty well. Two runs in five innings, both solo jacks. But other than that, you know, and like Kruko said, you're going to chalk that up to some nerves and adrenaline and all that stuff. But for his first major league start, he did fairly well. Certainly didn't lose the game. And actually, I noted that he's from Hollister, California, which is only about 20 minutes away from where I live. So he's a local kid here. Yeah,
Zach Green's a local kid, too. Zach Greene, they talked about. Uh-huh. His first Giants memory is the 0-2 World Series, and that was his first gut punch as a fan. And I relate to that because 87's my first memory, really, as a Giants fan. So I totally get being a gut punch. So having those two guys wearing the orange and black, it really seemed to be special for them.
Yeah, I thought that was so cool to read that. I knew he was a local boy, but I didn't know if he was a Giants fan or not. But then coming through with that statement saying, yeah, he was a rabid Giants fan, and his first real gut punch as a Giants fan was losing the 0-2 World Series. So it's pretty cool. I mean, I can't imagine, Eric, you know, as I've grown up, you know, my childhood in the 70s and 80s and 90s as a major Giants fan, and then just being able to play for that team. I mean, that just made a dream come true. That's so cool. But so both rookies contribute.
Yeah, Menez had the same kind of story. He went to a game with his dad, and then they went to the dugout shop afterwards after watching Timmy pitch, and he bought a Timmy jersey.
Oh, he bought a Timmy jersey. No kidding. I didn't know that.
Yep.
So some homegrown – well, it's not really homegrown because Zach Greene came from the Phillies, but you know what I'm saying.
Hometown talent, yeah.
That is fantastic. So – I was building a six-drawer dresser in my son's room, listening to the game. The big difference from being at the game on Friday night. And with one out in the bottom of the 12th, Mike Yastrzemski stepped to the plate.
3-2 pitch. Here it is. Lifted to left. Hit well. McNeil back at the wall. On a hair! And
3-2, get it in. Gieselman saying, or Gesellman saying, all right, go ahead. Take your best bolt the other way. And that's exactly what Mike Yastrzemski does. He takes it and backspins it right out of here. And the Giants go home winners. They take 3 out of 4, 3 extra inning games. And the one game losing slide is over.
The one game losing slide is over. Oh, that was so much fun.
We can laugh about Giants it now. Baseball, it really was. They had everything. They had they bludgeoned teams to death, and they won squeakers. They won an extra innings after falling behind. They won an extra innings after being shut out the entire game. I mean, every kind of Giants win imaginable we had this week. It was, if nothing else happens this season, we'll look back on this stretch as the most fun that we had.
Yeah. Oh, but I think what's really important right now is I don't have the numbers right in front of me, but I know they have to get to 74 wins. So that's 24 more wins they need to get Bochy to 2,000. And now that's squarely within their sights. I mean, they really have to tank to not be able to get to that mark. I mean, they should get there. They should get there.
Yeah.
I'm pretty excited.
24 and 38 is what they'd have to go the rest of the way to just get there.
That. Yeah, 24 and 38, and they would still get there. So hopefully they won't be 23 and 39, you know?
Yeah, I don't see it happening.
I don't see that happening. Yeah, speaking of stat check, let's go ahead and look at it. The Giants, you mentioned, are hitting 280 in the month of July. That's third in the National League. They're also third in the major leagues in home runs for the month with 30. Who would have thunk that? And they also lead all of baseball in runs scored in July with 116, and the next team has 103. They're actually 13 runs up on the second place team. They are just that's the one that impressed me. I mean, I knew they scored a lot of runs, but I thought, oh, there's going to be one American League team out there, you know? Nope. They're number one right there. They're also tied for the National League lead in OPS and a slugging at .833 and .494. And they're third in the National League in ERA in July at 3.64. So, and that includes your games in Colorado and your 11-run effort against the Mets. So that's really not bad considering everything. So it's not just strength in hitting, although that's been their biggest surprise and strength this month, but their pitching. Look at the way the bullpen pitched against the Mets. That was the key to taking the series.
Yeah, overall, they're just playing like a good major league team. They're you're not going out there and expecting one side to fail and the other side to be frustrated anymore. It's a well-oiled machine right now. And Zaidi, with the moves he's making by giving people spot starts and using Suarez and now Menez to move them up and down and in the rotation, we're going to see like a seven-man rotation the rest of the way with different plugs and pieces coming in. And if they can keep it up like this, I mean – that's pretty impressive, especially with all the turnover they've had at the front end of the rotation compared to the bullpen, which has pretty much been locked down for the entire, you know, last few months.
Yeah, Zaidi's really running this team almost like a fantasy team, you know?
Yeah.
He's not afraid to make transactions from week to week. I mean, the old regime, you just don't see stuff like this. You see guys get called up once in a while, and of course, you have your injuries and replacements, but he's just doing it on an almost daily basis. And it seems to be working, you know, a little bit of tinkering here and there, and he's finding the pieces that are starting to work. He's getting production and contributions from kids coming up and making their major league debut. They may not be sustainable, but every win is a win, and every little bit helps, and that can add up cumulatively, which is what's been happening in this month of July. And really, even the better part of June, they were 14 and 13 in June, so they're guaranteed a winning month in July right now. So that's going to be back-to-back winning months, and they've won 5 series in a row. So, I mean, you can't say anything else about what this team has been doing, and to be honest, Farhan deserves a lot of the credit, even though there hasn't been that major signing, there hasn't been that major trade. It's all these little moves, but we've talked about this before. Every little ripple in the pond adds up, and that's what's happening right now.
It's like it was simmering for a while, and now it's really starting to come to a boil because he's been able to add different ingredients. And it shows. All right, we're getting into who's hot and who's not here. And half of this who's hot list is guys that Farhan went out. Dickerson, his last 11 games, he's .457, 2 homers, 8 runs driven in. He's leading the majors in batting average since becoming a Giant. Nobody expected that. Yastrzemski, they got him off the waiver wire from the Orioles. One of the worst teams in baseball, the Orioles, didn't want Yastrzemski. In his last 8 games over the past week, he had .382, 4 bombs, 9 runs driven in. He also scored 4 times in one of those games in Colorado. You got Donovan Solano, who, again, has been brought in under Zaidi. In his last eight games, he hit .429 with a homer and five driven in. And then you got Brandon Crawford, who woke up from the dead, who hit .313 this last week, and aided by his eight RBI, nine RBI day last Monday, he drove in 12 runs and had three homers this week. And then we talked about Tyler Beattie on Friday. You got to watch eight innings, a shutout ball that was just absolutely phenomenal to watch him carve up a lineup. And then the bullpen, which I don't think we've hyped enough. Yes, we have. The bullpen was just absolutely on fire this past weekend for the Mets versus the Mets.
Yeah. And I forgot to mention Madison Bumgarner not only had that one run, nine inning performance. And by the way, he wanted to come out and pitch the 10th. He really lobbied with with Bochy, and he knew he probably wasn't having it. And Bochy said, you know, I thought about it for a second, but he just couldn't justify it. And so, but over his last five starts, I believe his ERA is 1.59, could be 1.85. I don't know. It's somewhere in the mid to high ones. I can look it up. Point being, it's under two over his last five starts. So suddenly Madison Bumgarner has just kicked it up a notch, and not because he wants to get traded. It's because he is feeling what this team is doing, and he seems to ride off of it just like he does in the postseason. And he's becoming the Madison Bumgarner of old. And it's really, really great to see, because, yes, it is driving up his trade value to a certain extent, but it's also helping this team tremendously.
Yeah, it's crazy to think Bum might be a Giant still when August comes. I didn't expect that.
No, his last start, you know, he was quoted as saying about the trade, "I don't give a shit." And that was great. He just wants to help this team win right now, and he's always wanted to be a Giant. So, and then you had an interesting article penned by Tim Flannery on his music page, actually. He said, "I know this isn't a baseball-related thing, but I feel like I need to get this off my chest." And he's begging for the Giants to do one of two things. One, sign him to an extension at market value, or two, trade his ass right now. And a lot of people got on top of Tim going, wait, what? I thought you and Bum were friends. Why would you want him to be traded? That's crazy. Why would you want that? And he says, no. It's about taking care of my friend, Madison Bumgarner. That's what it's about. Because he said the worst thing that can happen to Madison Bumgarner is to play out the season and not get an extension. Because what is going to happen is potentially what happened to guys this year who were free agents coming off of, you know, a nice run, who deserved very large contracts. If anyone signs Madison Bumgarner before, I believe it's June 1st or whatever, next year, they have to offer up a draft pick in compensation to the Giants for signing Madison Bumgarner. And a lot of teams shy away from that. And so everybody backs off on certain guys. Like this year and last year, it's happened all over the place. And what that's going to do, it's obviously going to hurt his trade value, or not his trade value, but his contract value. And then he's going to be signed somewhere in the middle of the season for a lot less than what he could have if the Giants would have just extended him, or if he was traded to another team and then maybe they signed him for an extension. So his point is, look, the worst thing you can do for my friend Madison Bumgarner is let him play out the season and not re-sign him. And I don't know. That's a distinct possibility, Eric. I mean, with Farhan, even if the Giants made the postseason, and let's say Madison Bumgarner pitches another shutout in the wild card game and another game or two in the playoffs before they get knocked out, if that were to happen, anything aside from, let's say, winning the World Series like they did in 2014, where he came out of the bullpen, I don't see Farhan signing him to a mega deal. I just don't. And so I do think that he would be an restricted free agent. And then teams have to consider that compensatory draft pick for signing him.
Yeah, the one thing that we don't know in all this is, are Bumgarner and Zaidi the type to talk to each other over the next week? And Bumgarner would say, "I like what you're doing here. I want to stay. If we can sign an extension somehow, I'll take a little bit of a hometown discount. Let's just get it done." You know, you got to wonder if that kind of a thing is possible. Because I agree with Flan. Those are the two best options for Bumgarner: trade him now or sign him to an extension. I've mentioned on the show that's why I think one of those two things will happen. Because I don't see him staying as a lame duck I think Zaidi is willing to work with him, and Bochy through Zaidi is willing to work with him to make sure that Madison Bumgarner is in the place that he wants to be. And I wouldn't be shocked if we hear about some extension or something like that at this point. I honestly just wouldn't be shocked by anything.
No.
But it's, you know, he's got Bumgarner starts tomorrow against the Cubs, and then he'll have, I guess, another start Sunday or Monday next week before the trade deadline. So they've got a couple more shots to wait it out. But I agree with Flan. You know, one of those two options are the best for his friend, Madison Bumgarner. And being what he's been to this franchise, that's what he deserves.
So talking about who's not, again, the list isn't very long. Austin Slater, who was hot a couple of weeks ago, is 2 for his last 21. That's an 0.95 clip. And Panda, 7 for his last 34. That's 2.06. But that's okay. Every team's going to have a couple of cold players, even the hottest team in baseball. So it's great that it's a short list. So let's talk about transactions. Boy, we kind of called this a long time ago. We knew it was going to happen at some point in the season, but Derek Holland finally was DFA'd, even though they had signed him to a whatever $6 million one-year contract this year. He led this team in wins and strikeouts and innings pitched last year. Granted, Madison Bumgarner missed a big portion of the year, and they really had no one else step up, and it was a horrific year. But he was a major contributor to this team last year, and this year he's just a completely different pitcher. And his nail in the coffin was giving up 4 runs in an inning against the Mets over the weekend on Saturday, and that was it. I think Farhan and everyone had just seen enough and said, look, this team is hot right now. Let's give some of the younger kids a chance because you're not helping this team. And so they went ahead and said, well, we'll eat the rest of your contract, no big deal, and we'll see what happens with him this week. So I wouldn't say it's sad to see him go. I think he was a great personality on this team, and he was good for the team last year, but this year he just didn't cut it.
Yeah, Pomerantz has been moved to the bullpen, which led the way for this transaction. Yeah. With Watson and Smith being left-handers in the bullpen as well, they just they chalked it up to too many lefties. And I give the Giants credit. Holland was their biggest free agent signing this offseason, which is just crazy stupid. And I give them credit for moving on from him and eating the contract when they feel like it wasn't going to work out. And they're really looking at who can help us win now as well as be in the future plans. And Derek Holland just did not fit that scenario anymore. Yeah. So they have 7 days to see if they can trade him before he's outrighted. I have no idea if some team will want to take a flyer on him. But, you know, he was fun while he was here. But I agree with the Giants. It was time to move on.
Yeah, and I don't think if he cleared waivers that he would take an assignment to Sacramento. I don't think
so. I don't either.
I think he would just want to be an unrestricted free agent. Which, by the way, I forgot to mention this last week, but Mac Williamson was also DFA'd by the Mariners. So that same thing happened in Seattle, and we called it. Hot start, and then just got cold. Feel bad for the kid. But
yep.
Okay, so Zach Greene and Connor Menez, of course, made their Major League debuts, called it from Sacramento. Ty Block was optioned back down. Ryder Jones was also DFA'd. He's a guy we've seen bounce up and down over the last few years, but I guess they've finally seen enough of Jones. And then William Jerez, of course, was called up. He got his first major league win in that extra inning game, and then he was optioned back down to Sacramento. And then early in the week, you had Suarez, D-Rod, and Ray Black all optioned to Sacramento. So this has just been a flurry of transactions, but this is the way that he's running this team. It really is like a rotisserie team, a fantasy team. He's just plugging and playing what he can. He will run out of options on some of these players if he keeps doing this, but he's that's why he's calling up new kids that have not been up before.
Because yes.
A fresh set of options, and that saves some of the guys who have been called up and down a few times.
This is how he operates, though. If you look back, and I hate making this comparison, but if you look back at the Dodgers the last few years, this is what they've done with their pitching staff at different times. They've had their horses, and then they've had to plug and play in all the other places, and that's what he did. He would call guys up and send them back down. You know, and then when you find a guy like Walker Buehler who sticks, he sticks. When you find a guy like Tyler Beede who sticks, he sticks. And if the other spots aren't filled yet, then you keep just churning it and churning it. And I think this is something that, as Giants fans, we should get used to for the rest of the year, because I think it's going to be like this. That's why I said earlier, it's like a 7-8-man pitching staff at this point. Between
and
the guys
think,
that start and get sent down.
I think as a AAA player for the Giants, for Sacramento, you actually got to be really excited about this proposition.
Yes.
Because instead of a regime where you're thinking, maybe I'm never going to have a chance to crack at this unless there's a flurry of injuries. Now you're thinking, man, if I perform well down here, if I get on their radar and I get a shot to be called up, I mean, I could be that next Tyler Beede. I could be the next, you know, Derek Rodriguez before he went back on his slump. I could be that guy. And so I think it definitely drives a lot of these players to say, hey, I have a chance of making the major leagues. And if I get up there and if I perform well, I have a chance of sticking up there. And I think that's pretty cool. I think that is an incentive, actually. It's like an incentive program for the bus between Sacramento and San Francisco. So it's pretty cool to see. I love seeing all these new names too. Names we wouldn't even have talked about or even known about when we did our pre-season show. I mean, this is just weird to see this team and the roster the way it's constructed right now. But it's working.
Yeah, this is Zaidi all over it. It's fantastic to see.
So we do have a few injuries. Nick Vincent is now on a rehab assignment with San Jose. Travis Bergen is a rehab with Sacramento. Longoria still on the injured list. A couple days ago, they were saying that he might be back in about 2 weeks. He's working out in a boot. So how's a boot that, Eric?
Sorry. I mean, it's funny. I never thought of Longo as like an injured type guy, but now it sounds like it's going to take him a while. And it's weird to think that he got hurt when he was on his hot streak. Like, what gives, man?
Yeah, he was. He's been disappointed. He's been quoted as saying that he misses the team and he wishes he could be contributing during this hot streak. But
yeah, well, thank goodness Zach Green. I mean, it was good to see him.
Yeah.
And you know, Zach Green coming from the minors, I brought him up a couple of weeks on the minor league report. And this week, Baseball America, they released their updated top 100 prospect list compared to what they had during the season. And before the season started, only Joey Bart was on the top 100 prospect list. Now the Giants have four minor leaguers on the top 100 prospect list. Joey Bart sitting at 19. Helio Ramos has gotten back in the top 100. He's at 68. Shortstop Marco Luciano. He's a 17-year-old playing in the Arizona Fall League. He's a shortstop. He's batting .344 with 8 home runs, 7 doubles, and 5 stolen bases in the Arizona Fall League. Only 17 years old. He's got a 1.156 OPS. He's got a .447 on-base percentage. It's an Arizona instructional league, right? But he's a kid. He's tearing it up. Like every day I'm seeing things go by in my timeline. And then first round draft pick from this year, Hunter Bishop, the outfielder, he cracked the top 100 at 98. So the Giants have four guys on the top 100 and the teams with the most have like 7 or 8. So the farm system's again getting a little better, and it's the minor league report lines right up with all these pitchers in the major league report. It's Farhan's fingers on some of this, getting some of the guys like Luciano and Bishop. Luciano is just 17 years old. It's just unbelievable what he's doing in Arizona. So that's what's going on in the minors right now.
Yeah, and again, you know, if the Giants are cold this week and he pulls the trigger on a trade or two with maybe Smith and or Bumgarner, I mean, you could see this list inflate if they grab a couple of top 100 prospects for these trades.
Absolutely.
I mean, they could have 6, you know, in the top 100, you know, maybe even 7, God forbid. So, you know, this is the pro for that trade. Is you look at this list that's increasing in quality in the minor leagues, and you can see this churning out some major league ready talent in 2 to 3 years. And of course, guys like Luciano probably a little bit longer, but you can see the future just starting to kind of percolate and emerge. And, you know, a couple more draft picks and a couple of trades, they could be quite good. But again, hey, let's not get ahead of ourselves. This team has thrown in a weird wrench into Farhan's original plans, which I'm sure were to absolutely sell. And now he's just kind of, it's kind of like you're right, you're coming up to eat your steak and you're like, well, wait a minute. I don't know. There's something going on here. There's like a maggot here or something. Let me take a step back and see what happens, you know? And that's what he's doing right now. He's going to take a step back. And I don't know. Originally, I think this drove up maybe the trade value for Bum or Smith, because now teams might be thinking, we're going to have to sweeten the pot for Farhan to pull the trigger, because now they can recognize that the GM may want to hold off on a trade because the team's doing so well. So they may need to sweeten the pot to do it. But regardless, these things always happen within the last day or two before the trade deadline, because it's really time is the ultimate pressure. It's the time. Yeah. So you get teams coming right up to the edge saying, where are we in the standings? Where are we going in the postseason? And do we really need this person? You know, after assessing all of their talent and their injuries that may have happened and all that. So Cool stuff.
Here's the week where it's really going to come into focus. The Giants welcome in the Chicago Cubs for three. And the Cubs are hot. The Cubs have won, I believe it's 7 of 9 since the All-Star game. They've been home for a long homestand. And I think they only lost – yeah, they did. They only lost one yesterday. They swept the Reds. They only lost one of the Pirates. So they're 7-2. So they're the other hottest team going into things right now in the National League. So I think these three games tonight, tomorrow night, and Wednesday afternoon are going to be really telling. I'm really looking forward. I know you're going to tonight's game, but I'm really looking forward to Wednesday afternoon is Beattie versus Lester. And Tuesday night's not bad either, but you know, thankfully you don't have to go see Darvish pitch because it's like pulling teeth watching that guy pitch. Oh my God, you've played in the field behind those pitchers that just take forever. Oh my God, you get so
mind
bored.
Killer.
Oh, they're horrible. And Darvish is like that. I mean, he's been pitching better. He really has. The Giants need to watch out on Tuesday. But, the pace of the game is going to be excruciating. It's going to be at least a three-hour game. It's not going to be like these quick games they had against the Mets. But you're going to the game tonight. Who's pitching tonight?
We got Sean Anderson pitching for the Giants. And then a new kid, Thomas Mills, for the Cubs. He has one start. Sorry, I shouldn't say one start. He has three starts in his career, one start this year. He pitched six innings and gave up a couple of runs. So now I have pop-ups coming up everywhere. Thank you.
Well, he's a brand-new pitcher the Giants have never seen before, so I can only assume he's going to no-hit them.
He's going to no-hit them. I know. It's once they said that in the broadcast yesterday, they'll be facing this guy. I said Thomas Mills. Sorry, it's Alec Mills. Thomas is his middle name. Alec Mills will be making his second start this year. The Giants have never seen him, and I immediately thought what you said. Oh, they'll get shut out by him. I mean, there's no doubt. I mean, the Giants have this long history of being befuddled by new pitchers. They just always are. And to some extent, it's understandable because they don't have a scouting report on this kid. But to the other extent, it's like, why? Why? They should be pouncing on this kid. But he's got a career ERA, 5.27. He's 0-1 with three starts. He's been in 11 games, 27 innings pitched. This year, only six innings and those three runs.
I don't remember seeing him. I watched just about every Cubs game. I don't remember seeing him this year. I had no idea they needed somebody to make a spot start. Cole Hamels is injured. That's probably the reason why. Or else we'd probably be seeing Hamels tonight.
Yeah, like you said, game two is Darvish against Bumgarner, and then game three is Lester and Beattie. So, I mean, you know, as it stands right now, you may expect the Giants to lose tonight because of the rookie pitcher, which is stupid to say.
Yeah.
I expect the Giants to win game two because of Bumgarner's pitching. He's been so hot lately. His ERA is down to 3.65. And game three, it's a bit of a toss-up for me. Beattie's been hot lately. But, you know, Beattie's also been cold earlier. And Lester can be either way as well.
Lester hasn't been on fire lately. He had a great start like 2-3 starts ago. And I think he gave up 4 runs in his last start and maybe 3 runs the start before that. So they could probably scratch a couple things across against him.
Yeah, so definitely I could see the Giants taking 2 out of 3. But again, the Cubs are hot, and who knows what's going to happen. It's baseball.
Yep.
All right, so I will be at tonight's game. So if you happen to be listening to this on my drive up to San Francisco, be sure to tune in to TorchCast on Twitter and my personal Twitter at ChadK21. I'll put some stuff on there as well. You can also follow Eric at 2OutHits. Check out our website at TorchCast.com where we post all our episodes and articles. And what else you got, Eric?
Not much else. Just I'm excited for the War of the Roses in my house the next 3 days. We fight over which broadcast to watch, and she wears blue, and
I wear orange.
Right. Yeah, I love Cubs Giants baseball. I really do.
Oh, it's got to be the ultimate for you. Certainly your household with your wife. I get that. But even your history with the Cubs, so.
Yeah, and I know both these teams so well, so I already know the strengths and weaknesses. So I usually have a pretty good idea what's going to happen in these games, and it generally does happen. That's why when we talk about it, they could take 2 out of 3 from the Cubs, or they could get swept. I mean, anything is possible at this point.
All right, well, that's going to do it for episode 173 of the TorchCast. Hope you enjoyed it. We should be back, no problem, for next Monday, episode 174. Until then, may this streak continue. May the Giants stay hot. And maybe by next Monday, they'll be tied or leading the wild card race. Who knows? All right, well, until then, for Eric, this is Chad signing off. We'll see you next week. A boom.
A big thank you to everybody for listening to the TortureCast, the podcast by and for fans of the San Francisco Giants. Follow us on Twitter at TortureCast. You can also like us on Facebook or check out our blog at torturecast.com. I also want to say thank you to Ashcon and Bailey for letting us use their song Feeling Like a Giant for our intro. For Ben Lee and Chad King, my name is Willie Dills saying we'll see you next time.